This is ExpertHR.com, your go-to HR compliance resource for federal, state, and municipal law. I'm David Weisenfeld for ExpertHR.com, published by Reed Business Information and proudly partnered with LexisNexis. On this podcast, our focus turns to the key employment law highlights from the Supreme Court's last term and what they could mean for you in the coming year and beyond. The justices will soon return from their summer break, so before they do, it's the perfect time for a look back at the most notable rulings affecting the HR arena. Of course, you may have heard about a certain healthcare benefits ruling, and we'll get to that and more later in the program. But first, we'll turn to a hotly contested overtime pay case that flew a bit under the radar, but nonetheless has a host of implications for employers. Joining me now here in our newsroom to discuss the Supreme Court's ruling in the case of Christopher versus SmithKline Beecham is Michael Cardman, who leads Expert HR's coverage of the Fair Labor Standards Act. Michael, welcome.
Thank you, David.
Michael, overtime can be such a problematic subject for certain employers. Tell us what was at issue in this case.
As you know, the Fair Labor Standards Act requires employers to pay employees overtime anytime they work more than 40 hours in a work week. There are many exemptions to this requirement, and one of them is for a type of employees called outside salespersons. Basic requirements for this exemption are that you, one, make sales, and two, be outside, meaning that you spend most of your time outside the office. You're out in the field making sales. So in this case, there were two pharmaceutical sales reps, and they spent well over 40 hours each week, about 50 to 60 hours each week, out in the field visiting doctors. And federal law prohibits drug companies from actually selling their products directly to consumers. What has to happen is that physicians need to prescribe their drugs. So the sales reps don't necessarily sell their drugs in the traditional sense of the word, but what they do is they go to the doctor's office and they obtain non-binding commitments from the doctors to prescribe their drugs when appropriate. Well, these two pharmaceutical sales reps sued their employer, GlaxoSmithKline Beecham, saying that we aren't actually making sales. We're not selling a product, and because of this, we are entitled to overtime. And it went all the way up to the Supreme Court.
And the court in that case ruled 5-4 in favor of GlaxoSmithKline. What was the key factor, you think, that led to this decision?
As with many things, the Supreme Court looked very closely at the language in the exemption, and it was interesting, and they used the word clue many times in this ruling. It was almost like they were detectives, and they were looking closely at the language for clues about what how this exemption should be applied. And the actual language that was at issue is the statutory definition of a sale. And it is, quote, "A sale includes any sale, exchange, contract to sell, consignment for sale, shipment for sale, or other disposition." Now, that's a mouthful. The justices looked at this definition, and they saw these clues in the wording. One thing that they saw was that it says includes. So that means not necessarily everything is there. There could be other things. It includes these things. Also, the word any suggests that this is a broader definition, that it can encompass many different things. And then finally, the phrase at the end, other disposition. They call that a catch-all phrase that could include other types of things, including the type of sales that these pharmaceutical sales reps make. And so they concluded, it's arrangements that are tantamount in a particular industry to a paradigmatic sale of a commodity. And for this reason, they were making sales and were thus exempt.
Now, this is quite a unique overtime case, Michael, not the traditional type that we see. So discuss a little bit more this outside sales personnel issue and why you think it's especially significant.
Well, the outside sales is a fairly common exemption, and this is particularly important for the pharmaceutical industry, of course. They rely on a small army of these pharmaceutical sales reps who go out. So this was an especially interesting ruling for any employers who employ these types of outside salespersons.
This result represented a bit of a rebuke to the Department of Labor, which had sided with the sales reps in this case. What was the DOL's reasoning for doing so?
Well, the DOL has had a program that goes back to 2004 when they put out new FLSA regulations. They call it the Overtime Security Amicus Program. And essentially what they do is when there are important FLSA cases before an appeals court or before the Supreme Court, they will file a friend of the court brief, an amicus brief, trying to persuade the court to rule the way the DOL believes they should rule. Now, you see these friend of the court briefs come out a lot with the ACLU and the Chamber of Commerce and groups like this file these briefs. And the courts don't necessarily need to defer to groups like that. If they find the briefs persuasive, then it might sway them a little bit, but they're not that important. However, with a federal agency like DOL, there is precedent that requires the court to defer to their interpretation as long as it's not inconsistent with the law. And DOL has had a pretty good track record since 2004. They've filed almost 100 of these briefs, and they have swayed the courts with many of the briefs. It may not be the deciding factor, but it certainly didn't hurt. And they scored a big win not too long ago in 2007. The U.S. Supreme Court deferred to their interpretation in an FLSA case about domestic companions. In this case, however, the Supreme Court said that they did not want to defer to DOL's interpretation. And the reasoning why was they said that it was inconsistent with the law, that DOL's reasoning was not sound in this case. And there were many reasons for this. They found that, for one thing, to side with DOL would create a massive liability for the pharmaceutical industry, which would be an unfair surprise. And that was an element that went into the Supreme Court's reasoning. They also found that DOL never actually enforced its own policy. For decades, pharmaceutical companies have been employing these types of sales reps, but DOL has never actually enforced its own policy about this.
Michael, what do you see as the overall implications of this ruling for employers? Does it have any impact that goes beyond pharmaceutical sales reps?
It may for employers who have outside salespersons who don't make sales in the traditional sense of the word. This could come up in the financial services industry, for instance, other industries like that where somebody's out there and they're not actually changing title or a deed or actually making a sale, but they're doing things that are tantamount to a sale. It could really help employers to have more confidence that they can classify these employees as exempt.
Okay, thank you, Michael. We'll move now from one 5-4 decision to another, and the Supreme Court's much-anticipated health care ruling from the final day of its term upholding the Affordable Care Act. Unless you were on a camping trip in late June or traveling somewhere with no access to TV or the internet, there was no way to miss this decision, which caught many people by surprise. Tracy Morley covers health and benefits issues for Expert HR. Tracy, tell us something employers may not know about what the High Court's ruling means for them on a practical day-to-day basis.
Well, David, I think that a big unknown for employers is the cost that's going to be associated with implementing and complying with the numerous provisions of the Affordable Care Act. The Supreme Court decision made it very clear that employers have to comply and move forward with their compliance efforts, but what is not clear is what the cost to the employers is going to be in the long term. And as events continue to unfold, I think that employers are going to find that their planning and implementation efforts are going to result in some fairly substantive increases to both administrative and staff costs. And as I'm sure you are aware, anytime we talk about costs or spending, we know that the finance area of the organization also has to be involved. So longer term, it should be interesting to see if and how the roles of HR and finance change and or evolve over the next several years.
Tracy, what are you hearing from your sources about the overall ramifications of this ruling on the benefits landscape?
Well, the enactment of the Affordable Care Act has really shifted the entire healthcare landscape, probably even more so than any changes we saw as a result of the implementation of ERISA or the creation of Medicare and Medicaid. And when the law was first passed, there was a lot of concern that employers would stop offering benefit plans However, despite the ongoing uncertainty associated with complying with the provisions of the ACA, at the present time, it looks like most employers are on track for keeping their benefit plans in place. In terms of some longer-term considerations, I think there is really a great opportunity for employers to continue to educate their employees about their benefit plans, and I think there will also be a brighter future for consumer-driven or high-deductible health plans.
A lot of people are wondering, what's next now that the court has spoken? Are we going to see any legislation in response, or is this going to resolve the issue once and for all?
David, I think we have only seen the beginning and not the end of the healthcare debate, particularly since presidential candidate Mitt Romney has pledged to repeal the ACA if he is elected. This is a big campaign issue for both candidates, and more than likely we will not have final resolution until after the November election. In fact, many employers are waiting until after the election to start their compliance efforts.
That's a great point, and I want to pick up with that. Regarding compliance, is there anything special that employers should know about what they need to do to comply?
Well, David, for today, the Affordable Care Act is the law of the land, and many employers are working diligently to ensure compliance. In the short term, employers should be focusing their efforts on the Uniform Summary of Benefits and Coverage, reporting health plan value on Form W-2, adjusting flexible spending account limits, Medicare tax changes, and communicating information to their employees about health insurance exchanges. In addition, a number of provisions are slated for 2014 and beyond, and it is not too early for employers to start planning for those provisions as well.
Unlike those first two cases, the Supreme Court did manage to speak as one in another employment law dispute, this one dealing with the extent to which religious employers are immune from discrimination suits. In Hosanna Tabor versus EEOC, the court for the first time formally recognized the ministerial exception to federal employment laws, grounded in the First Amendment. That case involved a disability lawsuit brought by a Michigan parochial school teacher who suffered from narcolepsy. The teacher taught secular subjects but did attend chapel with her class. And even though most of her duties were not religious in nature, the justices found that wasn't crucial. Writing for the court, Chief Justice John Roberts said it was unlikely any church employee would do exclusively religious chores. So an employee need not be a minister or head of a congregation for the ministerial exception to apply and squelch a lawsuit, as it did in this case with the teacher's ADA claim. The court refused to adopt a rigid formula, though, for defining when an employee actually qualifies as a minister. In supporting the teacher, the EEOC had claimed the analysis should be the same whether she worked for a labor union, a social club, or a church, but the court disagreed. The justices stopped short, though, of saying that the ministerial exception would be a bar to all employment suits against religious employers. For instance, the court didn't address possible claims of tortious conduct by a religious employer against an employee. The court also said it was expressing no view as to whether other lawsuits against a religious employer would be barred under the ministerial exception. So, presumably, a church janitor or cook would still have a chance to prevail in a similar dispute. Again, the case is Hosanna Tabor versus the EEOC. From there, we'll move on to the last but certainly not least ruling in our look back at the Supreme Court's term, Arizona versus United States. That was the infamous Show Me Your Papers case involving the Arizona law that would have let local police there stop individuals suspected of being in the country illegally and asking them to show proof that they were here lawfully. That Arizona law also included an employment law provision affecting undocumented workers. And Expert HR's Melissa Silver joins me now to discuss that provision and what the Supreme Court had to say about it.
Hi, David. Yes, back in 2010, Arizona enacted the Support Our Law Enforcement in Safe Neighborhoods Act, otherwise known as SB 1070. And that law was to discourage and deter the unlawful entry and presence of aliens and economic activity by persons unlawfully present in the U.S. The Supreme Court was faced with four provisions of the law. The provision that we were discussing is Section 5C, which makes it a misdemeanor for an unauthorized alien to knowingly apply for work, solicit work in a public place, or perform work as an employee or independent contractor. The court struck down that provision and held that it was preempted by federal law since it presents an obstacle to the Immigration Reform and Control Act. That act makes it illegal for employers to knowingly hire, recruit, refer, or continue to employ unauthorized workers.
With the Supreme Court striking down this portion of the law, Melissa, what does this mean for employers going forward?
David, actually, it doesn't change anything for employers. The Federal Immigration Reform and Control Act requires every employer to verify the employment authorization status of all employees. As the court said, these requirements are enforced through criminal penalties, an escalating series of civil penalties tied to the number of times an employer has violated their provisions. However, what is important is that one provision was upheld by the Supreme Court, which was Section 2B. That section requires state officers to make a reasonable attempt to determine the immigration status of any person stopped, detained, or arrested on some legitimate basis if reasonable suspicion exists that the person is an alien and is unlawfully present in the U.S. Employers should be aware of that provision because if their foreign workers are detained and they cannot demonstrate that they are lawfully in the U.S., this can expose an employer's violations of the act.
Melissa, are there any other implications from this ruling that you see affecting employers?
Yes. Recently, the 11th Circuit just followed the Supreme Court's decision and ruled on several provisions of Georgia's and Alabama's immigration laws, which contain similar provisions to Arizona's immigration law. We would not be surprised if additional circuits will follow the Supreme Court decision.
Let that be the last word, Melissa. Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, that's all the time we have for this podcast, but the Supreme Court's next term will soon be here, and we'll continue to keep you up to date with all of the employment law developments from Washington. I'm David Weisenfeld. We hope you've enjoyed this ExpertHR.com podcast. Thanks again for listening, and special thanks to our Melissa Silver, Michael Cardman, and Tracy Morley for all of their reporting insights. Continue checking our website regularly for more podcasts on hot-button employment law topics affecting HR.
The opinions expressed in this program do not represent legal advice, nor should they necessarily be taken as the views of Expert HR or its employees. ExpertHR.com is published by Reed Business Information and is proudly partnered with LexisNexis. For more information about Expert HR and our subscription offering, call us toll-free at 1-855-973-7847. That's 1-855-973-7847. Copyright 2012, all rights reserved.